we are live for the very last episode of the TFD Performance Podcast for this year, and what a pretty big year it has been. And that's what we're talking about today. I'm joined by Senior Performance Dietitian Jack Doherty, and we are recapping the year of 2022. Combat Jack, welcome back for one last time of the calendar year.
Thank you. Very excited this year's coming to an end. It's been an absolutely enormous one.
Massive year, hey? Like, especially coming off 2021. 2021 was a huge year coming out of COVID, right? Like, coming out of that 2020 period, I feel like there's a lot of planning and everything, and we really changed a lot of things up coming out of there and hit the ground running in 2021. And that was a massive year. I remember finishing last year thinking, like, wow, that was nuts. And then reflecting on what we've done this year, looking back on it and going, wow, that doesn't seem like that much compared to what we did this year.
100%. I think one of the biggest things was just the amount of travel, like trying to run the business whilst both of us traveling around the world quite frequently, was just going from not being able to basically leave my house for 6 months or even a year, COVID times, to be able to travel the world multiple times throughout the year was enormous.
Yeah, I actually had this discussion. We'll get into a few of the questions that I put up on our social media to answer here. But that was one of them, is how much travel do you guys actually do? And I think I counted this year, out of the 52 weeks of the year, I think 14 weeks of them I spent overseas working with athletes. So a fair chunk. What's that? Just 3.5 months of this year spent overseas.
Yeah, enormous. Absolutely enormous for both of us. I think put together, I think I was away. We did like 6 trips internationally this year for 5 weeks and everything. That doesn't even account traveling interstate too. We did a lot of interstate travel. A lot of people don't realize we did as well, which was just as time consuming as well.
Yeah. I think I clocked in maybe 7 or 8. I can't remember the exact number, 7 or 8 international fight weeks this year, which was a lot, but it's really cool. Right. I think it's just an accumulation of the last couple of years and everything that's been going on. And travel is great, don't get me wrong. It can be pretty tough, and it definitely is something I want to explore next year after coming back off of this, and something we will be doing in a new sleep science course that we will be releasing with Dr. Ian Dunnigan. Something I made sure we're talking about in that course is jet lag and the effect that travel has on athletic performance, and how you can use things such as simple tips while you're traveling, certain nutritional approaches that you can use to help combat that. But I think let's get into this. We put up on our social media some questions that you guys want. There was a bunch of some pretty funny ones that came through. I'm just going to pick the top ones that came to mind. And this one's really good. Because it leads into a couple other questions. What were the most asked questions you got on the weekend Q&A? And I did the weekend Q&A pretty consistently. I'd say most weekends, maybe I missed one or two, but did it pretty much every weekend of the year. And there were 3 questions that immediately came to mind when I read this. And we'll go through each of them, because these were consistently asked every single week. And not just consistently asked, it was a multitude of people asking the same questions every single week, no matter how many times I answered it. So very, very first one, creatine and fight camp and fight week. How do you approach it? I'll throw it over to you, Combat Jack.
As we've spoken about a multitude of times, obviously creatine is the most researched supplement and one of the most effective. Cheapest, greatest benefits in terms of, you know, cost to benefit analysis. But I think that during fight camp, it's essential. A lot of people get, the one thing people get scared of is obviously the water retention. I think the research now shows that yes, you do retain water for the initial period, but then it does seem to kind of taper off to your normal levels. But I think, you know, implementing that in your fight camp is fantastic, obviously for the performance benefits, but as we know now, the cognitive benefits that come with it as well. In terms of brain health and so forth. And then simply what we do generally is just we cut creatine out just as a kind of a way of potentially manipulating some of the water weight. We just cut it out 5 to 7 days before the weigh-in date. So I think a lot of people have questions about it. Like, obviously we know it's safe. It's super effective. Yes, there's a bit of water retention, but it plateaus out and we just remove it during fight week. So I think that everyone, any athlete, but especially combat sport athletes, should implement it year round and then just simply manipulate it around fights, weigh-in day.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think creatine is just one of those supplements where there's just so, so, so many potential benefits and just next to no potential negatives. And that's why we just advertise it to all of our athletes and make sure that they are taking it all year round and that they are using it habitually. And that's the really key point that people often miss when we talk about fight camp, is you need to be using it habitually And if you are using it habitually, it really doesn't matter if you're taking it in flight cam. It's not going to affect the number that you see on the scale. It's not going to affect your weekly weight loss, because like Jack said, where we do see, if we do see any at all, that extra weight that comes from putting on that little bit of water weight, it comes from that very initial loading phase when you're first super compensating it in your body. And if you're habitually taking it before you start your fight camp, then you're absolutely fine to keep taking it. I've even had athletes that we keep using it during fight week. It makes no difference to the actual weight descent itself, but usually as a precautionary measure, we do take it out. And I think more mentally than anything, I think the athlete just taking it out, it just puts their mind at ease. And then we just reintroduce it. I reintroduce it with the overnight oats that we make first meal after weigh-ins to get that back in their body and just stick back to their normal habitual routine as much as possible.
Yeah, and also the second most asked question regarding that, you can take it at any time of the day. It doesn't need to be pre-workout, and you can even, you know, split up the 5 gram dose throughout the day if that you prefer it that way. So you can take it any time of the day and just make sure you do it habitually.
Yeah, this question has been asked so much that I even have gotten contact with our good friend of the podcast, good friend of TFT, Dr. Scott Forbes, who resides in Canada, also known as Dr. Creatine. We're actually making a Creatine for Combat Sports Athletes short course. And that course, Dr. Forbes is just going to break down all of the latest research, all of the up and coming, a lot of the new research papers Scott and his team actually published. So he's right on the edge, very, very, very latest research Scott's involved with. And he will be able to inform everyone about what creatine is, best way to take it, what the research is saying, what you actually do during fight camp and, you know, fight week. Do you have to cut it out? Do you not? So that's a really cool course that I'm looking forward to dropping next year as well. The next question that we get, and this one popped up again, probably a slight second to the creatine question, but still every single week, I feel like this is an area that fighters really get concerned about. And I'm glad that they're getting concerned about this area, because it's that old philosophy of, what's one more day, or it's not done when you make weight. You still have to get your body ready to compete either the next day or whether it's that afternoon, that evening. It's not just done when you make weight. There's a whole process you need to go through to make sure your body's in the best position when you go to compete. And the question that we constantly got every week, what do you eat post weigh-in?
Yeah, I think we all get this question, but obviously the principle is we go with, you know, high carbohydrate, moderate protein, low fat, just to make sure the digestive process is nice and quick. And obviously fats and fiber can slow the digestive process when we're trying to really get those carbohydrates digested through the system back into the glycogen, back into the muscles. Those are kind of principles we follow. But something that I also talk about to a lot of people is not introducing foods that you haven't had during camp back in. So a major mistake, what I see a lot of people do is, you know, even, you know, everyone likes to go enjoy a meal out, but sometimes some of the choices can kind of upset the stomach. You haven't had it in a while, or there's a lot of MSG in certain foods. So make sure when you're kind of eating after weigh-ins, it kind of emulating the food you had in camp. So doing the same kind of processes you've had, obviously a lot higher in carbohydrates. Maybe you're lowering the fat content, or you're playing with the protein component as well, but just really make sure that you're kind of not introducing foods that you kind of haven't been during camp, and it's really trying to get those carbohydrates back in. So you can do that obviously by you know, the liquid carbohydrates is something that's a great option to do, as well as obviously the solids from whole foods.
Yeah, that's a great explanation. I'll add a little part to this, because this is somewhat of a similar question we got a lot, is when do I introduce all of that food back in? Can I just do it straight away, or do I have to get my fluid back in? And the rule of thumb that we go with our guys is that when you think your gut can handle it, let's try putting it in. And there's no real hard and fast number that we say, hey, after 2 hours and after this much fluid, you should start putting in, because everybody's different and everyone goes through a different process to get that weight off. And obviously in this post weigh-in period, the goal is to put everything and then some back in of what we took out over the course of that fight week, right? And that starts with replacing that fluid, getting the right amount of electrolytes, which is very individual for each person, even making those concoctions. It all depends on, you know, the blood volume level of that athlete. How much did you actually sweat out immediately on that day? And how much water weight have you lost in the days leading up? That's very, very important. And all of those things are going to influence how hydrated your gut is. Some athletes who don't cut a lot of weight, they'll be able to put, you know, a little bit of fluid in and they'll feel fine. They'll go, you know what, I can have this food. I can feel really good. I can have it. I'm not going to get any stomach issues, no GI problems. And they're good to go. Other guys, you really have to spend, you know, 1, 2, if not more hours slowly putting that fluid back in so you can restore that blood volume, get the organs rehydrated again and get some fluid back into that gut so you can introduce that food and make sure that it goes through and it starts digesting and absorbing properly. So that's something really, really important to consider.
Yeah, and just eating slowly. Like I tell all my athletes, just make sure you're listening to the body. So obviously not force feeding. If you're feeling full, just don't keep pushing the fluids and the food back in. Give your body time to digest. And then when you feel like you have the capacity, put the food back in. But again, eat slowly. You know, make sure you're chewing your food adequately. Just take the process nice and slow because you'll find that your digestion's better, you'll feel better, and you'll be able to get more volume in over time rather than trying to rush the process.
Yeah, especially for the guys that do bigger weight cuts and that are moving more water weight over the week. And then especially the night before or morning of, I always use the analogy of the slip and slide. Because if you think of your gut, your gastrointestinal tract, it's really just a big tube, eh? From this opening to that opening down the bottom. And if you think of a slip and slide, what makes a slip and slide work is that you've got the fluid and you've got, say, the detergent or whatever else that's making that slippery. So when you dive on it, you can move through it. You need to think of that the same as your gut post weigh-in, is that you need to make sure that you're getting that fluid back on, you're rehydrating that gut, and then you're allowing your body to, you know, produce all of the acids and everything we need to break down those foods that we're putting in. So we need to make sure before we reintroduce those foods that we're rehydrating that gut, or we're making our slip and slide as effective as possible. And we've seen when that goes wrong. I've seen athletes when they're just curled up. There's a couple of years ago, there was a big fight in Melbourne, Australia. I think it was UFC 26 something, where the main event pulled out and had to go get gastric surgery. And I'm very, very confident that this was the issue. They introduced food far too fast after going through a really big weight cut. And that's what happened. And like a slip and slide, if you slide down that slip and slide dry without the correct amount of fluid or soap and everything else on there, what happens? And that's what happened to this athlete's gut. So very, very important, not only that you get the foods right, what you actually eat afterwards, but when you start having those foods. So I think the next question, and I'm going to throw this one over to you, Jack, you probably get this, not just on the Q&A every week. I reckon you get this probably 20 times a day, just in your Instagram DMs. How to manage weight out of camp? And that ain't a small question either.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest one, like how to handle blowouts. And I think I'll start with how I manage it with the guys I work with. So basically I say, like, obviously when you finish a fight camp, you finish your fight, you want to kind of indulge, and that's completely fine. You deserve it. And I don't really have restrictions on my guys. What I usually just say is that it just comes down to that. I know people don't want to hear it, but it's more about balance. Like the nutritional principles that I teach, which is obviously why by my check-ins and also by the nutrition plans that I provide, it's more using that as the foundations throughout when you finish the camp, using those principles as the foundation, but then allowing yourself to have these extra foods. Because what I think is everyone's problem and why you see these blowouts, everyone has this all or nothing mentality, or I'm dieting or I'm not. So it's more of like a thought process than rather than, you know, your body just always super compensating and putting on heaps of fat, which is obviously is a bit of a part of it, even if in a deficit for a long time, but it's more like the way you approach things. So I always tell my guys that instead of looking at it in a way of like, okay, I'm dieting now, I'm not going to do whatever I want, kind of it's that 52 weeks a year kind of concept, is that I'm going to use the principles of good nutrition as a foundation. But then when I'm not out of camp, I'm not going to be strict. If I want a banana bread, I'll have that. If I want to eat with my family, I can have that. But just generally just try to kind of eat at a balanced diet throughout the whole year, but then opt at different times to remove or add the different types of foods. And I definitely don't think that, you know, I think now what I preach even throughout camp is I don't really take specific foods out completely. So what I'm trying to do is year round, allow people to have the foods they enjoy just in different formats. So instead of going to Domino's and having a pizza, maybe have a pizza that you make at home. So you're still getting that kind of, that craving kind of, you know, you're having the foods you crave without, you know, without kind of breaking the bank, but you're not denying yourself and everything. So I think that's the main concept, is like, stop denying yourself for foods. Just find ways to incorporate that in your diet. And I think the people that I have who do have this kind of more of a balanced approach of kind of getting a bit more strict during camp, using the foundations out of camp but being a bit more flexible, you'll find their body composition kind of stays relatively the same like all year round. Obviously, their weight will increase, but it never spills out. So I think the main thing is that to work on, as an individual, work on your mentality towards a fight camp or a competition season. Like, manage it in terms of, I'm going to use flexibility, I'm going to use the nutritional principles that I have as a foundation for year round, but just allow myself more flexibility throughout the year. And that just gets rid of that all or nothing and these big binges that I found.
Yeah, I think it's important to discuss as well. And this is a combo I had the other day, is when we look at super high level athletes, say top level guys in the UFC, and you see guys that blow out quite a bit and they come back down. And Paddy Pimblett is obviously the first example that will come to everyone's mind. And you think, how can he get away with that? And a very interesting conversation that I had with someone was, they were saying to me, well, if you look at other athletes, say in the NBA, they're competing for, you know, I'd say 70% of the year. They're either in pre-training phase or they're in their actual season and they have scheduled postseason that they can't miss. So 70 to 80% of their year is taken up with actual dedicated training blocks. Where if you're an MMA athlete, you're in training camp for anywhere between 6 and 12 weeks. And you might only do that, if you're a top level guy, 1 to 3 times a year. So you've got all this other time throughout the year where they can put on this weight and then they have enough time to get it off. And I think, as an example, it's probably not the best for younger athletes that are looking at that, because when you look at the amateur scenes in combat sports or any other sport, really, whether it's soccer, rugby, cricket, tennis, whatever it is, and you've got a long competitive season, you just don't have the luxury of having those huge breaks where you can manipulate your weight up and down. And we don't even need to go into the possible negative effects that that yo-yo cycle can have over a long term, but you just can't commit to that. You have to commit to having this set period where this is my season and I need to stay in relatively good shape, or really good shape, all throughout this, so I can make sure that I'm looking after my health, looking after my performance, looking after my recovery, so you're in the best spot possible. So all of those principles that Jack's talking about are things that you can do, not only in that competitive season, but in the little bit of time on either side. So make sure when you're in that competitive season, you're doing everything you can to make sure you're physically and mentally in the best place possible for your training and your recovery.
I think there's another important part to talk about as well, is that I've had a conversation with someone recently about this, because obviously in camp, you have a perception of your body, or your body looks a certain way. And then when you're coming out of it, you know, the word that someone used there was, I'm fluffy. So they've obviously put on a little bit of body fat. Their weight wasn't dramatically increased from their competition weight, but I was talking about body image. So sometimes it may not actually be the fact that you're blowing out, you have more flexibility, they kind of get anxious about the way their body is changing in comparison to it being very lean. And kind of what I kind of speak about is that sometimes that our body image can be very skewed. Obviously, there's social media, you know, the perception of yourself in comparison to another time point in that year, and kind of accepting the fact that you may not be the healthiest mentally or physically to be that lean year round. And a bit of extra fluff is not a negative thing. And that's kind of comes down to, sometimes people like Paddy Pimblett do get this different extreme of putting on a lot of weight, but some people just look a bit different and that really plays on their mental health. So sometimes I just talk about people about challenging your self-image, allowing yourself to, yes, not, you don't have to be lean all year in a deficit all year. Sometimes your body needs to have a little bit of extra fluff just to function optimally. So, you know, obviously in this component, I always tell people, just challenge your self-image and just challenge your thought processes and accept the fact that at some points of the year or some points out of competition, you may look a bit different, and that's completely fine. You don't have to have abs year round. And like we've spoken about multitude of times, that a certain ripped physique does not mean optimal health or optimal performance in your sport.
Yeah, and that's something that's important to understand, is that these guys, when you see the photo of them weighing in on the scale and you're seeing them flexing and they're looking absolutely diced and super shredded, they look like that for a whole of 20 minutes. They look like 20 minutes and then they look like a different person and then they go back up. And if you look at their picture when they weigh in and then what they look like when they go into the cage the next night, it's usually drastically different. And then you look at what they look like 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks later when they're out of camp and that their normal healthy body composition and weight, it's a completely different again. So I think it's really important that even us as a community, we need to stop putting those pressures on these guys. We shouldn't be pressuring these guys and, you know, always making reference whenever we're talking about someone using weigh-in picks, because that's just not what they look like. That's an extremely depleted, deflated version of them. And that is not what a top-level performance athlete looks like. the athlete that goes in the cage the next night, or even the person that's starting their camp when they're at a good, healthy weight, they've got really good level of energy balance, they've got enough fuel, they've got enough body composition to support body fat, to support all their vital organs and vital functions, that's top level performance in my eyes, not this depleted, deflated guy that's on the scales that we often glorify for no reason. Right, so this is another cool question. I think tick that off. Those three by far the most asked questions in the Q&A. If we didn't answer them, then feel free to keep asking them, but I'm probably not going to answer them anymore in next Q&A. But this is a really cool one that we got, and I'll let you kick this one off, Combat Jack, is what was the biggest lessons you guys learned in 2022?
Work-life balance? No, I'm joking. I don't think either of us have that at the moment, just because how busy we've been. The biggest lesson I've learned is just from me working with people is just, you know, that in university you're taught a lot of things in terms of numbers and, you know, ways of implementing diet plans, nutrition plans, and the medical side of things. But then the biggest lesson I've learned is just the impact that we can have just concentrating on supporting someone from a more of a psychological standpoint, something we call, you know, nutritional counseling. So I think that's is such a vital component that a lot of people just don't understand or don't implement it. I think, you know, it kind of makes me so annoyed and cringy when you see these guys on Instagram being so harsh with people, and this, you know, that David Goggins kind of mentality, or other nutritional coaches being like, this is the way you've got to do things, and if you don't follow it to a T, you're weak, and that kind of concept. Just figure out the complex nature that how nutrition affects each in each and every individual, and how, as like, you know, nutritional coaches or whatever you like to name us, how, you know, you have to be so individualized in your approach and how to support different people. I've got some guys who, yep, they love a bit of a drill sergeant, they love the accountability, but other people I need to jump on the phone with for half an hour and just make sure they feel all right, whether that's about their body image, how they're feeling, their support systems and stuff like that. So I think the biggest lesson is just that, you know, understanding the complex nature about the psychology behind eating, and, you know, what we all need to do as a community, you know, as nutritional coaches, to really make sure that people in this field, you know, kind of feel supported and understand that, you know, not everyone's perfect. And I think one of the main questions I get is, obviously we work with some really high level guys, and everyone thinks these guys are perfect. And I kind of explain to them that these guys are just like everybody else's. They have their cravings, they have their binge moments, they have their moments of imperfection. And that's the kind of thing that, whether you're at the highest level or the lowest level, everyone's imperfect. And it's just finding out what works for you and how to progress towards your goal the best way that's going to support you physically and mentally.
Yeah, I think that's super important. I was tossing and turning about what I wanted to talk about here, and I will tell this story. I don't want to, because I don't want to give too much clout to this person, but I will, because if I'm staying true to myself and what I really do think, one of the biggest lessons I learned this year was really reiterated to me the importance of being surrounded by the right people. And I think this is timely, considering that City Kickboxing and Eugene Behrman just won Gym of the Year and Coach of the Year at the World MMA Awards. I think Eugene Behrman has probably had the complete opposite effect on me, and is the complete opposite coach that I had in my early athletic life. And I think those coaches in reflection had a huge, huge impact of me not being able to live up to my potential in my own athletic life when I was a younger person and I was going through playing different sports. What being around those guys and being around quite literally the best gym in the world with, as it stands right now, as much as it hurts me to say it, because I don't want him to hear me say it, the best MMA coach in the world in Eugene Behrman, being around him and seeing how he handles his athletes, how he communicates with them, how he constructs his team, how he makes decisions, his thought process as he goes into things, being around him has really allowed me to see my own potential and how to be the best role model to our athletes, to our team as a leader, how to model myself and how to be the best person that you can be for what you need to do. And I think that's really been an accumulative effect over the last 5 years and being around quite literally the best of the best in this field. And I'm very, very fortunate about that. And I think this year, just seeing everything that we achieved and, you know, the world titles and the travel and, you know, all of these awards, and that's all good front facing things. But I think behind the scenes, there's so much that goes into high performance and elite level sport. And I think Eugene Behrman is just one of those individuals that has such a positive impact on the people that is around him. And he has such a positive influence on so many people that he probably doesn't even realize how big his influence is. And being able to be right next to him in that pocket and learn from him has made me a lot better of a dietitian, as a practitioner. It's even affected how I look certain things in my own athletic career as it is right now. So in reflection, one of the biggest lessons I've learned in 2022 is just you've got to be very, very protective and very, 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 very clear of who you put yourself around, because the people that you put yourself around have such a huge influence on who you will end up being. So being very, very decisive and thoughtful of who you're hanging around with and what your intentions are with those people, very, very, very important. So I think let's go on to this question. I think let's go. I was tossing up whether we do this question because it's a bit out there. This is a funny one that came through. What was the dumbest / strangest experience you've had with an athlete this year? I think we could probably say unanimously we'll both agree on what we won't say the dumbest experience, because I think that's a bit out there, but definitely the strangest experience. You and I have definitely shared the most strangest experience of 2022, and that came International Fight Week in Las Vegas, and I bet you would agree with that. I'm going to let you tell the story though, Comrade Jack.
Yeah, so I was in Atlanta helping Jenna Fabian cut weight for a PFL fight, and then you booked me a ticket to Vegas from Atlanta to help you with the cuts for the CKB guys for the UFC in Las Vegas. And you gave me an address of a house to go to. So I got in an Uber, I got there, and I got rocked up to this, what would you call it? I don't know, what would you call it? Like this.
I know what I call it, but I don't know if we're like allowed to say it.
It was this huge like house, right? I'm like, objective from at the front, it looked like a normal house. You gave me how to get in, got in. And then I was just looking around this house, and I was just thought it was the strangest thing, because there was all these rooms, there was cameras, there was like all these bathrooms everywhere. There was a big pool. It looked like, to put frankly, it looked like a 80s swingers house. I think I'll put it that way. It was the strangest thing. I didn't know where to sit. I didn't know what to do. I'm like, what is this place? And then you eventually came when I was just sitting out there in 45 degree heat, just not knowing which room was safe for me to go in. I was just completely like, I was completely taken back by it, because there's a basketball court, there was a pool, there was like a whole shower block area. I was just bizarre.
Yeah, I think that's probably the kindest way you could put it. Is it was definitely a retired swinger's house or something like that, because you walk in and you're like, this, and to put it in context, this is the house that we stayed when Israel was fighting, Volk was fighting, I think Riddell was fighting, maybe Carlos was on that card. There's a whole bunch of them. So it was a huge house. We took a team of, man, so many people. There was another like overflow house somewhere else as well. So there was like 30 or 40 people from the gym there. But this house was just so bizarre. When we walked in, you're like walk into a weird reception that I don't know why there was a reception if this was just a house. And then just the way the rooms are set up, you walk up this hall and then there's just heaps of bedrooms. And then there was like a second house, and then you went in there, and then at the top of on the ceilings, there was like swings, like sets where you would hang swings and things. And then there was just like a very bizarre, like horror movie, like wax setup thing tucked away in the corner. And then there was that like creepy clown thing on the wheelchair that was like everyone would have seen on Embedded that we were just shoving in different rooms. Like it was just, you know what, it was like quite a cool house, but it was the strangest thing ever, because it was just so many weird things. Like there was a VR room that was just random. It was just so many.
Okay, my bedroom. My bedroom in the VR room was hilarious. But I think what strange was there was a guy who kept walking around the house, and I don't know everyone from the group. So I was just like, oh, who's this random guy? And it ended up being that the owner of this house was living there, and he was a magician on the strip. So he would come out and tell you a random story about him being a magician, but he'd always kind of float in and out. We didn't know if he was staying there. We didn't know if he was just watching us on these thousands of cameras everywhere. It was completely bizarre.
Such a weird experience. I ended up actually like manually taking apart the camera. One of my best friends runs a security camera installation business. I ended up calling him being like, how do I uninstall the one that's outside my bedroom? because it was just like, I was convinced he was watching us, and there was like a locked door. We didn't know if this dude was in here. Like, fun week. That was an awesome week, and there was like pretty good results that week and whatnot. But that was by far one of the strangest things I've gone through this year for sure. But last two questions. We'll wrap this up. We'll wrap this up in 10 minutes or so. But this is a good question. I think we could both add some interesting answers to this. Is how have you seen weight cutting change, not only in the past year, but since you guys started?
I think the biggest change is just the perception that bigger weight cuts are better, and kind of the, not even just the bigger weight cuts are better, that like everyone can do it. You should just do whatever. Like it's fine. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of like old school coaches, when I first started, you were like, nah, they can do, you know, 12% is fine or 10% is fine. And I think just the, what I've seen is the most really positive thing that we've seen is just this slowly everyone kind of coming on board that, you know, making weight cutting safer, people just cutting less weight, people kind of changing weight classes to be more appropriate. And I think that's obviously something we've strived to do since we've started. And I think this year, especially through conversation with coaches, helping clients change weight classes, just seeing the overall, you know, decrease in, you know, risky behaviors in terms of weight cutting, and just an overall shift in the community in terms of the view of weight cutting, the view of the safety of it, and kind of being open to discussing the fact that maybe people need to change weight classes, maybe this is too much. Even like, you know, I think we've both done this, like pulled people out of a camp and like, listen, you're too heavy. If you're going to undertake this, it's going to be completely unsafe. So just this great conversation that the community and we're all having at the moment, how to better it. So this hard-headed mentality has kind of shifted, and it's just kind of acceptance of the science, acceptance of the experience that we've had and a lot of other guys in the community have had about kind of changing the culture around it and making it just a safer environment for people to compete in.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I just think it's a easier conversation to have, and I think that comes off the back of, you know, not just ourselves, but other teams like us that do what we do and put out good information, put out lots of good science, lots of good researchers that are continue to evolve the science of weight cutting, so people like you and me can understand the science and then convey that science to the athletes on the ground level. And I just think it's becoming much, much more accepted that, like you said, it's not always the best option to cut more weight. And that old saying of just because you can make the weight doesn't mean you should is really ringing true with a lot of these athletes. And they're really starting to understand that, which is such a great thing to see, because when we started TFD all those years ago, that was one of the biggest things that we wanted to do, right? Like remove the negative things that can come from making weight, which I've always said, I think it's absolutely ridiculous that people put their lives on the line as a prerequisite to compete in the sport that they love. I've always maintained that that is absolutely ridiculous. And yes, maybe we're not at the point yet where we can take weight cutting out, which is probably the ultimate goal that we should be aiming for. We're not quite there yet, but at least we're making positive moves, at least in our part of the world. In Australia and New Zealand, where we're really focused on, we're definitely seeing it. And I see it at, you know, right at the grassroots levels when you go to local shows, right up to the top level. And I think I will take the opportunity to say a big part of it is because we have access to these top, top level guys. And yes, we do all the performance nutrition and we help them out, but they help out us out so, so, so much as well. Like guys like Alexander Volkanovski, Israel Adesanya, Dan Hooker, Kai Kara France, all of these guys, top, top, top level athletes that spread our message and spread this message that, you know, there is a better way to cut weight and you need to be working with professionals or be getting professional advice. We owe them a lot for being able to spread that message on such a huge platform. That's something I'll forever be thankful for them for. Okay. Very last question. Very, very last one, then we'll wrap this up. What do you guys have planned for 2023?
I think you're the best at answering this question, Jordy.
This is, yeah, I'll try to keep it succinct, but I think 2022, like we said, it was a massive year, lots of traveling. I think coming off the back of that question, a huge focus that we've had over the last few years is really working one-to-one with these athletes and educating certain teams and really spreading that message. What I've come to realize over pretty much this year and traveling, I think, Jack, you had a cool story about how you were traveling and you were in some bizarre part of the world, somewhere on like weird city in America. And there was a team from like Sweden or something that came up to you and said, hey, like, oh, you're wearing a TFD shirt and you're like, oh, I listen to that podcast all the time. That's how I actually learned how to cut weight properly. And you're like, oh yeah, I'm actually in that team, blah, blah, blah. And then start all this conversation. And events like that have really made me realize just how big of a reach we have around the world. And I don't think we're really tapping into that potential reach and getting our message across as much as we can. So for next year, that's really what we're putting a really bulk of our time into, is spreading that educational message. And I think we're doing that through the TFD Performance Hub, where we're going to offer a centralized spot where not only us, but all of the great colleagues that we have, researchers, other practitioners, other people in the field, scientists, where we can all congregate together and spread a really good amount of information and courses that really deep dive into this science, that we can really rock it out and spread that message to a far, far, far bigger reach throughout the world. Because I think we're doing quite well as it is, but we really haven't focused in on that. And I think that's really the next level, what we want to be focusing on.
Yeah, I think another aspect of, obviously I get heaps of questions from a lot of people about, you know, what archive jobs look like. I think a lot of people, you know, kind of would love to do what we do, but I think something that I'm going to focus on personally is kind of give everyone a bit of an insight in terms of kind of the day-to-day kind of workings of myself, kind of more detailed in terms of the weight cutting, because obviously everyone's very interested in that. I think last year that I clocked up, God knows how many weight cuts that I facilitated myself. And I just don't think that I've been giving people a kind of in-depth insight into kind of what I do. So that's kind of my focus at the start of next year, is kind of, you know, get together with our videographers, kind of create more content so you guys can kind of have a more of an insight about what we do, how intense it can get at different points, and just kind of just a reflection of not just ourselves, but the athletes we work with.
Yeah, and this is a conversation we've gone across back and forth for a long, long time. And we said, you know what, do we release this information? Not for the fact that we don't want to release it out to the public because we want to keep this in-house or whatever. More so, do we want to release this information, and how much power do you put in the wrong hands? That's always been the ultimate decision of why we haven't, is that, okay, we could put out all this information on how to cut weight, but maybe then does that actually increase the risk of bad weight cuts happening? Because then someone who isn't adequately qualified takes that information, they think that they're probably a bit more clued on than what they are by just doing that, and then something else goes wrong. But like Jack said, we've gone back and forth on this. And I think what we've realized from the work that we've done on the ground is that, yeah, you know what, we need to put this information out there because we know that it works. We've tried it with tens of thousands of athletes. We've got a good system. We've got a great network of colleagues around us, top-level researchers, top-level practitioners, top-level scientists who have all backed our processes, and they've all helped us develop them over the years. And I think now is probably a good time to do that. And, you know, we'll be releasing, I've written a book. It's a huge textbook with Danny Lennon that basically goes over everything we do from start to scratch. We'll be doing a whole series with Jack where we essentially pretty much follow Jack around 24/7 and show what he does step by step with his athletes in camp and get in the weight cut room. And Jack can explain why he's doing certain things and why he makes certain decisions to help you guys make those better decisions and fill in those gaps that you probably have, is, yeah, I know I should do this better, but I'm just not quite sure about this and that. And hopefully this new content that we're going to be producing next year will help you guys fill in that.
Yeah, I'm excited to show you guys all that kind of stuff. And also, when people say you guys are so lucky to travel, and then you see how we sit in a room for 5 days in Las Vegas, and then we're just slaving away, cooking and then doing a weight cut, and then we fly straight home. So that'll be great, you know. We can tell you how to go on a United flight and sit there for 18 hours and try to work on the tiny little computers that we have.
Yeah, I mean, that's another question that we got on this, actually came up twice. It's like, do you guys think you have the best job in the world? And my initial response is, yeah, I do think we have the best job. I absolutely love my job, but I think there's a lot more to it that you don't see. Like, we present a certain side of it on social media, and the level that we do this at with the athletes that we have, there's just no way to get around certain things. There's just a whole lot of stress that comes. There's a whole lot of pressure that comes. You know, we can't make mistakes, and we love that. And that's why we take the science so serious, and we surround ourselves with so many intelligent people to make sure our process is always up to date and is always as best as it can be. But the reality of the situation is that the job is hugely stressful. It's stressful doing the job. It's stressful traveling for it. There's a lot of behind the scenes logistics, figuring out how you feed people in different towns, where you source certain things from. There's a whole culinary side that we have a number of culinary, top-level culinary chefs that we use to advise us to make certain things taste a certain way. There's so much that goes on behind the scenes that it's just such a mammoth job. And don't get me wrong, we love our jobs, but there's so much more to it. And that's essentially what we want to show you guys, is that because I get 5-10 students a day messaging me, how do I get into this? And as far as I'm aware, I don't really think there's a university course or even a certificate or an online course or a weekend certification that you can do that even closely prepares you for what you need to know to be able to do this at a high level and do it efficiently, effectively, and safely. So hopefully with this new content that we're producing, we'll be able to offer that to you guys.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, it's very important to kind of see that how in depth we go and how much workload it actually takes to get to where we've got and where we're going. So I think it's great to share with you guys, especially university students, to kind of see where you kind of want your career to kind of go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think let's wrap that up there, Combat Jack. But 2022, in a wrap, we'll get back on the podcast probably the second week of January. So we'll take a little bit of a break. If you've got any topics you guys want us to go over, shoot us a message. Probably take a break on the weekend Q&As, but they'll start up mid-January next year.
And there it is, another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. We have had such a great response to our TFD Performance Hub, and we have just dropped our brand new course, Mobility for BJJ with Dr. Kickass. Dr. Kickass is one of the world leaders when it comes to BJJ performance, and this course has been made using the science of kin stretch, which helps BJJ athletes not only become stronger on the mat, but injury-proof their joints. This is truly a game changer for all BJJ athletes at every level of competition. If you want to start injury-proofing your body, then head to the link in the show notes and purchase our Mobility for BJJ course.